So with that said, I'm going to hand over to Federico for the second talk of the day, which is on free software and education.
Thank you very much.
No, this will be a bit less structured, because since we're talking about free software and education, and education is pretty much about knowledge and dissemination and construction of knowledge, I think it would be great if we construct this whole thing together than me trying to talk you into anything. Education is a very broad term. Education starts at home, actually, long before you ever get to the school, and one could argue that it never ends. It goes through several stages of school. You are at the university, and from then on you start learning. In many of these stages, computers have begun to appear and be used. And there are the main argument is that if you want to actually educate people, you need to do it with free software, because it's the one. It's only with free software that you can actually construct knowledge. This argument, let's get it. Let's get the education on IT itself out of the way as soon as possible, because it's the easiest one, and there are others, and the others are more interesting. If you are educating people who are working in IT or want to work in IT, how many people here are actually working in IT? Which, as expected, most of us. If you're planning to educate people in IT how to produce software, how to write, maintain, service software, it is actually a truism that you must do it with software that allows you to run it, study it, modify it, distribute it. Because if you don't, you cannot learn. How are you supposed how software works if you are not allowed to see how the software you use works? You cannot train or educate mechanics if your car will not let you open the hood. So it is essential it is immediate from the very material you're working with, that you have to work with free software, because otherwise you will not be able to learn properly. You will be merely trained, which is something that happens very often in universities. I see this happen a lot in Argentine universities, where you have actual universities who train students in the use of proprietary tools, instead of educating people on general principles of computer science. So what you end up with is trained users of tools and not educated makers of tools, which is what you actually need. Unfortunately, in most of these places, you have a lot of companies who are demanding that the university train more than educate, because they need coders, and they don't want to do the training, which would be their job. They want just the society to pay for the training of the people, so that they can use them for the 3 years during which that technology is actually useful, and then they can lay them off. So when we're talking about computer science, free software is essential. It's the only way you can do it properly. It is also it also raises awareness about the ethics of the trade. most people who study computer science today are not confronted, not once, during the whole education, with what it is exactly, what they do contributes to society? What is exactly the contribution of programmers to society? And how does what they do affect society? And what is the right way of doing it? I mean, doctors have this Hippocratic oath, where they are at least once confronted with the issue that, okay, you're studying all this in order to help people stay healthy. What is exactly that what we programmers do? What is our role? What is our contribution? It's something most people who study computer science don't get confronted with at all. Free software makes this apparent. Free software shows what is the right way of doing things. And so, in this particular area, it is very easy to see that free software is the only reasonable choice. It is sometimes an unpopular choice, precisely because of what I have just mentioned. You know, like companies demanding that you get programmers that are proficient in particular technology. And so politicians even tend to demand that universities dumb down their programs, dumb down their educational programs in order to cater to this thing. But that's not wise, not at all. More interesting than this issue of how should you teach computer science and why free software is very important there, it's the issue of why free software is important all over the place. And this has to do with the fact that computers are ever more pervasive. We have computers in this room disguised as all sorts of things. We have a computer disguised as a camera over there. We had a computer disguised as a recorder a few minutes ago on top of the table. I guess several of you have computers disguised as telephones in your pockets. And these things continually control, or these things mediate our communications. Computers are used ever more in order to get people to talk to each other. And since computers are controlled by software, whoever controls the software controls the communication. Software controls who can talk to whom, to say what, when. And that's a lot of power. And most people don't realize this. And the reason they don't realize this is because most people, even computer users, even advanced computer users, are actually computer illiterate. What do I mean by that? Somebody who can tell the difference between a sign that depicts a stick figure standing like this and another stick figure standing like this, but with something like, that looks like a triangle down here, and to figure out which one is the ladies and which one is the gentleman's room, is not literate. It can just tell two pictograms, the difference between two pictograms, can decode some symbols, but this person is not able to read, is not able to write. In the digital society, the real language, the language that is emerging, such as we have other languages emerging, emerge over time, such as the pictographic languages, for art, or the music notation for music, or math notation, is programming. In order to be computer literate, you must have some kind of grasp of how computers work. Many people say that in order to use a computer, you shouldn't have to learn how the computer works, because that's something for technicians. You should just sit down in the car. With the car, you should sit down in the car and then go away. But there is something fundamentally wrong with that. Because, okay, the car serves one purpose, and I would contend that people who just drive the car are at least dimly aware that you have once in a while to change the oil or something like that, because if they are not aware of that, they are in for some nasty surprise at some point or other. So you need to know the basics of everything you use. I'm not saying that everybody has to become a crack programmer. But just as we expect kids from school to come out of school with the ability to read and write and to compose new sentences they have not written yet, so you expect kids to be able to draw a donkey in such a way that you could confuse it with a dog but not with a duck. As you expect children to at least try to learn how to play a flute, which we expect children to know how to add, subtract, divide, multiply, do basic math. In order to be a full citizen in this society in which computing is becoming pervasive, you need to know the basic structure of programming. You need to know what these machines can do, because otherwise you will not be able to function as a full citizen. You will become subject of impositions such as electronic voting, just because you don't know what's going on there. Recently there was a poll conducted at a computer security conference about electronic voting. And it was very interesting because they did this poll in parallel, inside the conference and outside the conference. And inside the conference, they asked people whether they thought that it was possible to build tamper-proof electronic voting machines. And they did the same question to people on the street. And inside the conference, it was like 95 against and 5% thought that it was possible. And on the street, it was exactly the opposite. People on the street thought that it was certainly possible to do that. Why is that? It's just because the people who were on the street didn't have any idea at all of how computers work. Anybody who knows very little programming, you don't need to be a computer science genius. Anybody who knows a little bit of programming and starts to think about it can come up in 10 minutes with a dozen ways of programming an electronic voting machine in such a way that it will lie in an undetectable way. You don't need to know much about that. If we don't get people to know this kind of thing, we are actually delegating power into an elite of people who are the only ones who know about this. And this is a very, very dangerous thing to do. So we need to get this information out, and we need to educate people at all levels in this area. And free software helps us in the the primary school. It helps us in primary school in a lot of issues. In particular, it helps us carry on with a very strong message we deliver to kids at kindergarten level, which is you must share with your fellow classmates. Every time a kid comes to kindergarten with cookies, the teacher will tell the kid, "You please share, you must share this with your fellow classmates." Now, we must keep this up. It doesn't make sense to tell kids this in kindergarten, and then when they come to school, tell them, "Okay, you should share your cookies, but sharing your software is illegal. Don't do that." It is important to keep them, to keep telling them that sharing is what makes us a society. It's what makes us social beings, and that sharing is a value. It enables the school to keep promoting this these values. It enables the school to give the to whenever it uses software to. In education, to give the kids all the software they need so they can take it home if they want. It can it can gain a place in society as a replicator of knowledge in order to bring these things into the students' homes. And it has also another interesting thing: kids are extremely curious. They will disassemble anything you put in their hands in order to find out how it works. Now, they will naturally tend to do this with software too. Not all of them, but some of them will. They will want to know how these things tick. And it is a very strange role for a school to discourage these kids. When schools use proprietary software and a kid tries to find out how a program works, the license agreement the school has agreed to says that the school must step in and tell the kid that he or she should not try to do that, because that is not knowledge that is free for him or her to acquire. That is something that belongs to somebody else. And that's a weird message for school. Schools should promote curiosity. Schools should promote exploration. And it should promote also the appropriation of all this. I don't know how it is here in Ireland. In Latin America, where most of the proprietary software that is available is, of course, comes from abroad, mostly from the US or Europe. There's this huge detachment of people in software. Many people don't even think it is possible to develop software. Software is something that is made somewhere else. It's other companies, other people, other kind of people entirely that develop the software. And we just get it and use it as it is. It doesn't matter whether it actually does what we need or not. And that is a recipe for defeat. It makes you helpless. It is very different if students know that, okay, maybe I don't program, maybe I got very bad notes in the programming class, but nonetheless, you know, there's some 15-year-old girl in the 17th class who really rocks in this, and she has modified the software we use in the school and has made wonderful things happen here, and shared we share this with other schools, and actually our school is famous for having done this or that other thing, and that gives the whole technology thing, the whole software thing, puts it in a completely different light. It's something that is among us. It's something that we can do, that people who surround us can do and do well. This is where I would like to know a bit more how things are in Ireland, because my experience in these issues are mainly based on what happens in Latin America. So it would be great if you could later tell me a bit more of how you are seeing these issues in this area. Proprietary software companies hate this idea. The whole business model pretty much demands that people see software as a finished product, as something that is to be bought and used as it is. They hate the idea that they are a cultural thing, something that we build together, something that we can share, like we share a story, like we share a song. And they go to incredible lengths in order to avoid, to keep this from happening. You may be aware of a program called Partners in Learning from Microsoft. This is a program they are pushing very, very much in Argentina. And it's basically a program through which they basically donate licenses for schools so that they will have a legal way of putting Windows on their machines. And they do these agreements at education ministry levels so that they actually get the ministry to promote the use of Windows on the machine. It goes as far as, in Argentina, the Ministry of Education has bought, like, I don't remember the number of computers right now, to deliver to the poorest schools in the country. And since we have made quite a lot of noise about that, they decided to deliver the machines in dual boot configuration. So they would have Windows on one side and a Linux on the other side. Of course, the machine configuration was evidently geared towards using Windows, because you wouldn't need that machine to use free software. You could, with one machine like they bought, you could have built a 10-machine thin client lab using that as a server. As they have done it, it's just one workstation that runs that. So this was obviously thought with Windows in mind. But not only that, interesting thing is, the machine is dual boot, and they actually installed Mandriva Linux on it. I know whether you have ever installed Mandriva Linux, not that I recommend it because it contains it on the free software, but when you do, it installs in your machine a fairly complete desktop system with word processing, with media software, with drawing software, photographic retouch software, lots of stuff in it. So you have plenty of things to do. The ministry, or the people doing this for the ministry, actually went in the default install and uninstalled all software that didn't have a counterpart in the Windows half of the machine. So they actually went in and modified the software. They took extra work so that Windows would not look so bad. And this is very dangerous, and this shows how hard it is to fight these things at the top level. If you're going to fight this at government level, particularly at national level, you're going to encounter lots of resistance. You're going to encounter that these companies have lots of resources to invest in these things. I mean, they have even managed to twist UNESCO's arm into having a program. This is a UNESCO program called Microsoft Unlimited Advantage. No. If you go and try to find that there, it will be extremely hard. It will be extremely difficult. Resources there are not a match for that. However, there are several initiatives in different parts that are being very successful at doing this at the school level, at the local level. Here in Europe, you got Skole Linux from Norway, I think it is. Yes. Which does a great job of creating a free distribution to be used in thin-client environments with lots of educational software. And they are really doing a great job, and they are winning the battle school by school. In Latin America, we have several of these initiatives. From there's Glenstar in Argentina, there's Educalibre in Chile, there's SLEC in Colombia. There are several organizations which are mostly driven by teachers who aim at bringing free software into the schools. And this is an important lesson too. Techies can be very helpful at bringing free software to schools, but the driving forces are the teachers. I mean, we show up at the school once a week, once every month, maybe, but it's the teachers, the ones who are constantly there, and the ones who can turn education, computer education, from what it is now, which is training on proprietary tools, into actual learning things using the computer as a medium. Learning to write using the computer as they would use pen and pencil. Learning to paint, right? learning to paint, learning to do music, learning to do different things, learning geography using the computer, which is the really important thing. You don't need to teach a kid to use a computer. I mean, it will be hard enough to keep him from using it all day. So the important thing is go to the teachers, and that is where you will be maybe able to subvert these efforts by proprietary companies to impose their solutions. That is exactly what I was talking about, these machines that the Ministry of Education has bought. Gledukar has actually successfully managed to subvert this in taking the 10 machines they got, and with that they have turned them into thin client servers, and they have like 100 workstations dispersed in much more schools than they had originally, and while spending less energy and lots of stuff like that, which are important, particularly in rural settings. In any case, the important thing to remember is that we're not talking about training; we're talking about educating. And educating is not just about learning facts; it's about learning how to deal with things, how to deal with each other, how to construct knowledge and how to share knowledge. These are values that are present in free software and that are conspicuously absent in non-free software. And it is very important for all those who care that kids are full citizens and not serfs in the society we are we're constructing right now demand that education be done only with free software. So maybe there's Q&A on this now?
Can I ask them, are you advocating that at primary school level computer programming should be taught as a subject, you know, like on par with, say, geography?
I'm not a teacher as such, and I am I don't know exactly what the right moment would be for kids to be introduced to programming.
I took programming in first grade.
Sorry?
I took programming in first grade. I learned Logo.
Yeah.
TurtleGrafx.
I mean, I have seen kids learn to do primitive programming at a very early age, and I started teaching my nephew a bit of small talk when he was 10, and he was doing indirect recursive programs in like 2 weeks. I never had to tell him what was an indirect recursive program. And so actually I think kids tend to be underestimated by adults who have forgotten how brilliant they could be when they were kids. Which is mostly why you see all these training programs asking for, saying that they must teach how to use Word, Microsoft Word and Microsoft Excel at schools, because that's what the market demands. And when you see that, it's obvious that you're talking to an old guy who is thinking, hell, this thing is very difficult for me. Imagine how difficult it must be for a kid. And that's that's completely surreal. Put a kid to do that and he would learn it in like 15 minutes. So I do not know what would be the best age to introduce kids to programming. But what I'm saying is, it must be part of elementary, of the basic education, basic cultural, of the basic cultural tool set we give kids. We wouldn't think of doing an educational system in which we didn't teach basic math, or where we didn't teach, thinking of getting kids being able to write The Old Man in the Sea, but we make sure that they can write a letter to Aunt Elsie, you know, and that's the kind of thing that that we must ensure that it's done at some point. Where, it's up to probably to specialists to find out, or maybe even to kids. Enable kids to program at the computers they have at school, or give them tools to learn programming that they can use at home. And I guess as soon as they're ready or find a vocation for that, they will learn it by themselves. But what we must make very sure of is that we don't prevent them from learning. And that we don't further this message that they don't need to learn it, or even worse, that they are not allowed to learn it. More questions on this, or experiences, things you want to share?
Is for school kids. I don't know what sort of products they use. I think I used Encarta was the only computer training we really got in secondary school. I don't know if anyone else knows better.
Well, the Encarta versus Wikipedia thing is a very interesting comparison. I mean, we had recently an outrage in Argentina because all of a sudden some teacher found out that 10 provinces were missing from the description of Argentina in Encarta. They just weren't there. Whereas several schools have discovered Wikipedia, particularly the schools that are using free software. And since they have, you can find entries in Wikipedia on very, very small towns which have just one of these schools, and they have done really nice entries telling people about what's going on there, what their heritage is, what's what they produce, what they do, things that would never, ever appear on Wikipedia. That gives them also much more of an idea of belonging to an international community, of being there, being important. And that's also very encouraging. Wikipedia is great.
My sister is a private school teacher.
Yeah.
One of them is actually learning from talking to
her. Excuse me, can you speak up a bit?
One of them actually learned from one of them talking to her about this, about my whole philosophy, whatever, about free software. So software is that, there are alternatives out there, but they're not up to the standard, well, not up to where proprietary worlds at the moment, like, you know, in education through computers, like, you know, like, you have a lot of good free software alternatives, but they're not, what do you call them, the people in like, my sister especially, and all the other teachers, like, you know, they look at the free software and the alternatives, and they probably just, like, say, this doesn't do this, this doesn't do this, this doesn't do this, so we can't use this. And that's where the biggest drawback, or the biggest, like, you know, barrier to actually getting free software in schools. Like, you can put, like, you know, a word processor on, you can put, like, a graphics program on, but when you want to, like, you know, teach your kids, like, a number game or something like that kind of thing, you have, like, Mr. Potato.
Sorry?
You have Mr. Potato on KDE. Mm-hmm. You, like, you can drag and drop Mr. Potato. Stuff. So that's kind of like dexterity of the hands, but for numerical and alphabetical, there's very good stuff out there. But in actually the Windows world, there is lots and lots of stuff out there, and that's one of the biggest barriers to getting into schools.
Well, you know, there's there may be some truth to that, but. Most of the time when I see that kind of thing being stated, I try to step back and ask, just how big is the problem? You know, it's the same kind of reasoning we see when, we go to government agencies and say, hey, you should use free software. And say, well, you know, but we handle databases with 5 gazillion bazillion records, and we just can't handle that with free software databases. Something which I don't know whether it's true or not, but let's assume for a moment that it is. Is that a reason why you will not use OpenOffice? Many people say, okay, we cannot do everything we want to do with free software, and so they don't even start. And they don't even realize that they can't do everything they want to do with proprietary software either, because it's not there. So this, the problem is that we must fight for mindshare in this kind of thing. Yeah, because the proprietary model is actually very much in everybody's minds. Most people think that proprietary licensing is the predominant business model in the software world. And many people just don't get what this is all about. And the issue that they don't find a satisfactory program for teaching writing skills to kids. Let's write it. I mean, we're talking education ministries here. There are resources for that. If we have resources for buying licenses, how come we don't have the resources to actually program these things? I mean, we're not talking putting anything in orbit. They are, these are programs that require quite a bit of artwork and some ingenuity into getting, but it's something that is within our grasp to develop, and it, they shouldn't be so expensive. Why don't we go and do it? And we can share it. And we can get kids. We can get kids from higher grades to write the software for the kids in lower grades. Lower years. We have resources there. Let's use them. So this is maybe the flip side of free software. Free software enables you to do lots of things. Now, you have this ability to do them. Use it. Take responsibility for the software. The way of dealing with free software is not the same client, the same customer-provider relationship you have in proprietary software. It's an appropriation thing. It is your software as it is everybody else's. So if you're just going to wait until somebody develops it, well, maybe you'll get lucky. Maybe you won't. But you can take your destiny in your hands. Do it.
I think, like you were saying about that, say when a child comes into school with cookies, and the teacher teaches the child a little bit of community spirit, that what to do with the cookies is to share them so other people can share them and appreciate them as well. And that kind of touches on the open source idea of...
Actually, it's a free software idea.
Yeah.
Open source is not so much about sharing.
Well, essentially what I'm getting at is that it can all be used, let's say, help nurture the idea of a community spirit that doesn't necessarily have anything to do with computers or software or anything like that, but that, let's say, of teaching them to, let's say, have a better community spirit to help people do other things that might necessarily involve any form of technology. It all just gels in there very nicely.
Yeah, that is exactly the point. The role of the school is not just to teach kids facts. It's also to teach them how to live in a society, how to live together, how to be a part of a whole. And sharing is a vital part of that learning process. And when you're teaching kids that you should not share software, okay, it is problematic from the point of view of what will happen with software in that community, but it is more problematic from the side of which message the kids are getting. That sharing is, they've told me before that sharing was good, but maybe it isn't all that good that it was touted to be then. It's about the attitude you teach children, and that is that's not related to technology at all.
Especially when you share software, you still got it. Whereas if you share cookies, you haven't.
Yeah, it's even easier. So we may be delivering this very Lutheran message: is you should only share when it hurts. but it's true. There's no reason why you shouldn't share it, other than weird legislation. So if there is software we can share, it's vital that you tell kids that there is this thing that you can do it, and that it's better for them.
You're talking about sharing software with everybody and telling the kids about it. But I'm only found out about this sharing software. So when I was in college, it was Microsoft Word, Microsoft Excel, PowerPoint. It's all we ever got told about.
Yeah.
And the only time I heard about this sharing software I'd ever entered it, I was completely new to this. This is my first day of anything like this, was when I met Ken.
Yeah.
And he told me about it, and he explained it to me, and then you've explained it even better today. But it's that kind of information we need to put more out there. Because I'm now 30, and I've never heard of this before. I never heard about it in school, in libraries, because my local library, for instance, has computers that you can hire for an hour every day if you want, but it's all Microsoft on it. And that's all a public service, so the open software should be on that computer for the public, alongside Microsoft stuff as well, if you want to. But unfortunately, I've never heard about this before, so in trying to share it, you need to put it out there more as a tool for everybody.
The point is, as far as the free software community is able to, we are doing our utmost to do that.
Mm.
Only, when Microsoft got Windows 95 out, they actually rented an aircraft carrier to do the presentation.
Mm.
You know, the marketing power of these companies is so huge. I mean, it is actually, it's funny, it's actually the same relationship as the pharmaceutical industry. It has 4.5 more times more budget for marketing than it has for research and development. So this huge marketing actually manages to hide us from you. It's very difficult. However, there are the progress of free software in terms of public awareness is slow, but it's steady. That's a good point. I mean, there are several success stories that we can point to, large success stories such as that of Extremadura, such as what's happening in Brazil, what is happening in many places. And this is actually slow, but it's very solid. And I'm glad to welcome you to the community. And I'm glad to have you here. And actually, the best we can do is actually talk about these things. There are so many things that are being swept under the rug in these days, just because, yeah, people regard all this like this is a technology thing. I don't care. I know this program and I want to stay with it because that's what I learned. And people are not even aware of what they're giving away in exchange for that ease of not having to learn anything new.
Would you be able to offer, say, talks in local libraries or classes in local libraries, and that would bring it more out into the public domain? Because to me, after hearing what he's been telling me for the last couple of months, what yourself said today, it seems to make a whole lot more sense, both cost-effective and actually passing it on so it gets to more people. It seems to make a lot more sense than just Microsoft. That's your only option.
I'm sure IFSO would be glad to have to do that. I see nodding heads way back there.
Yeah.
Do you know anything about the web laptop for child project? I know some have been ordered for, I think it's Brazil.
Brazil and Argentina are both partners in the One Laptop per Child initiative. I was very skeptical of it until about a week ago, where I got to talk to some people on the One Laptop per Child project in Brazil.
Mm-hmm.
Brazil was a free software conference last week, and there I got to talk to several people who are actually working in the project. So I was highly skeptical of it. Now I'm just skeptical. it is much better than I had thought in many ways. For once, it may be even be technically feasible and all what they aim for. There are aspects of the One Laptop per Child program that are very interesting. One of them is, well, it will run free software. Kids will be exposed to free software and will have their experience of using free software and sharing software, and that is a good thing. Kids that receive that will have at least this chance, which they are pretty much denied most of the rest of the time. Also, it places a lot of confidence in kids themselves, which I find essentially good. It's the whole idea of it is to try to saturate an area with these computers so that every kid in school age has one. And so they can figure it out for themselves, and they can learn despite the teachers and not thanks to the teachers. Not to put teachers down, but this is, I think, essentially good. To empower children to learn at their own pace is really a good thing. There are problems with, I think, with the implementation. These computers are going to be ordered and distributed by governments. And this means, of course, that they will very likely be used as political favors to certain areas which are which have a special relationship with the central government, and others will don't behave as well, will not get any, or whatever, and that kind of, it will lend itself to that kind of play. It also has an aftertaste of technocracy, you know, of saying, okay, we have an educational problem which is not a technological problem, and we'll try to solve it by, just by throwing hardware at it until it disappears. And that kind of thing has a way of not happening. I mean, the solution at the end. I'm sure some good things will come out of it, because I mean, we're going to distribute millions of them to lots of kids. And so some kids somewhere, I'm sure, will do wonders with them. I have no doubt about it whatsoever. What the efficiency, how much percent of them will actually find good use or not, it's something I do not foresee. It's something, it's out there. Nobody knows what will happen. It is complicated. There are nice, as far as I could see, the prototypes are seem to be viable and seem to be interesting things. It kind of shows, actually, I cannot but have some sympathy for the whole idea that they are pretty much saying, okay, there's no way we're going to fix the educational system at ministry level or anything under, we've got to fix it at the student level. So let's empower the students, whatever empowering actually means. And that has a nice ring to it. However, how it works out, I know. It's still so that, it's the U.S. leading program for poor countries, and these poor countries don't actually get to participate in the design and production of all this stuff, because that is all concentrated in the U.S., and it would be actually much better if we could actually engage people from the local scientific communities into producing and designing this whole thing, because that would enable real technology transfer and ideas. And stuff. So it's hard to know, to tell whether to love it or hate it. I think it's both.
Are those machines, do they follow a free design of the hardware?
That is something I have not been able to find out, and I have asked.
Can we drive it?
No, I mean physical, the design of the machines themselves, will it be proprietary or free?
That's something I have not been able to find out. Whether, I have heard people from the OLPC program saying that they were going, that they were aiming for a patent on some, for a software patent on some of the stuff they were doing there, and to put the software patent in the software patent commons, to be used as retaliation in cases where it might be needed. So from that point of view, it seems that the whole approach is to make it. To make everything free, the things that they are patenting, they want to liberate so anyone can use it in free software and stuff. However, whether the design itself and such can be duplicated by anybody, I have not been able to get a definite answer on that, and I will try to. that would certainly be a good thing. Something to hope for.
This is one other thing. Sometimes the perception of open source is that it's good enough for poor people, but what you're really aiming for is Windows. And this kind of fits into that because these are people who can't afford books, and so they, these children are being given computers, and the idea is, well, they're so poor, they'll just have to accept, you know, free software. And when they've made it, then they can buy Windows.
It is.
It shouldn't be like that, but a lot of people have that perception.
It is. A lot of people do. A lot of people do. So that is why I actually think that that it is unfortunate that One Laptop Per Child actually communicates the open source the open source brand and not the free software brand, because that is in freedom is where the where this whole value, the pedagogical value is. It is when you realize that you are actually upgrading what you can do with the software, that you realize that you are actually doing better. I have the whole issue of free software for poor people is something that we have to fight very as hard as we can in all places where we get, because it really does get very negative, you know? And actually we have had very positive experiences in migrations when we have managed to convince management to sell the migration to the rest of the people as an upgrade. We're going to new software. We're going to be able to do more stuff. And there are really two or three things that you can do which are very small, which we perceive as very small because we know it's easy, but which makes a lot of a difference for end users. You know, like controlling network traffic. And actually getting, which actually gets everybody more bandwidth and the network response better. That's something that's very easy to do in large organizations. And you sell it as something that you have managed to do very easily thanks to free software. And people start noticing. They start demanding. There are several things like that, like, for instance, making sure that all new computers get into the organization with free software. So people who will want new computers,
yeah.
And that kind of thing, yeah. You know, or just don't buy new computers, but use the old computers as thin clients, and use a nice backend server. So that people's computers will start to work faster, and they will start demanding it. So it's actually important to sell it as an upgrade. In this case, the whole idea is, it is meant for people who would probably have no access to computers at all. So it is pretty easy to set as an upgrade.
For coming here and to Irish Linux User Group for providing the venue. And there are monthly meetings of Irish Free Software Organization on the third Tuesday of each month. I think Glenn gave the information earlier if people want to continue the discussion. So yeah. Thanks for coming.
Thank you very much to Axel and for making it possible to come here.